Hi, everyone. Dan Cassidy here. Welcome back to the Viewpoints podcast series with my colleague Burkhard Varnholt. Burkhard, welcome back from your travels. It's nice to be back on the podcast with you today. It's interesting. There never seems to be a dull day while Wall Street today, as we're recording here on Wednesday, April 23rd, seems to continue its recovery. This after President Trump indicated that he does not plan to fire Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell, and that he'll, quote, be very nice with China. Many investors, understandably so, remain on edge. And you think about tariffs, policy pivots, earnings, inflation, the labor market, Fed independence, and, of course, the dollar, just a few unsettling uncertainties. So, Burkhard, the first question I have for you today is, how much longer will this last, and where could the uncertainty settle?
Well, thanks for having me back again, Dan. Great to speak to you. Let me just give you three spontaneous thoughts on this. The first one is we still believe in a new world order rising. And frankly, I think that puts a floor under how low global growth can sink. All the themes that we discussed in the past, the global energy transition, the new global arms and infrastructure race, and the reordering of global supply chains, are all hugely capex intensive and their political priorities, too. Add to that the relatively good health of the financial sector, plus the fact that this turmoil is man-made, and you'll see why we're still not in the recession camp. We see a slowdown in growth, but not a car crash ahead of us. Having said that, make no mistake, it certainly does look as if the rise of a new world order is preceded by a new global disorder first. And let me add two thoughts just on that one. There's a positive and, frankly, a not-so-positive one. The positive one is that, at least in our sense, this peak fear moment should be behind us. When you look at or read his book, The Art of the Deal, Donald Trump repeatedly argues in it to aim very high, that's a quote from his book, and then to gradually, I quote him again, butter up. End of quote of the other side. So the first chapter in such a negotiating strategy is probably, it seems, now behind us. Overwhelming power, that was Liberation Day, if you will. And the next steps will be to use the quote, to butter up and to arrive at tariffs, which are lower than what we heard and feared on Liberation Day, but still high, like the 10% universal tariff. Another sobering quote from his book, The Art of the Deal, however, is where he writes that the real excitement is playing the game. That quotation suggests that while the news flows in the coming weeks should be more bullish, we sense, than bearish, fixing a new global trade order between the U.S. and its biggest trading partners is probably still a long way to go. Let me add to that a second thought about tariffs and inflation, because that has been really front and center and unnerving many investors lately. So look, our view is that short-term inflation tariffs are usually inflationary. However, having said that, medium to longer term, they can actually turn out to be deflationary. And here's why. In the short term, they're obviously a price hike. That's inflationary, but only once. But medium and longer term, they can depress demand. That, in turn, enforces lower prices. And that's how, and this is somewhat counterintuitive, tariffs can actually lead to lower, not higher, inflation. But it's still a risky strategy, which puts markets on edge. But unfortunately, we can't change the sequence. First comes inflation, and then it grinds lower. And that's the political catch for Fed President Jerome Powell, obviously, these days.
That's very interesting and helpful to hear. So let me take your argument one step further. Let's say the S&P 500 rallies to, say, the 5,600 level. How do you suggest investors react in that circumstance? Cut back or perhaps stay the course? And since we're on this, what if the S&P 500 doesn't, maybe tanks to the 4,800 level instead of recovering to 5,600? What would one do in that circumstance?
Sure, those are good questions. I always think such what-if questions are a good discipline to challenge our convictions, and they also sharpen our sense of strategy, even though, frankly, they're impossible to answer because we simply don't know and cannot predict the context and circumstances in which they happen, of course. But so here's my three thoughts that I'd put up to your question. For one, we think a recovery to 5,600 is fundamentally more likely than another setback to, say, 4,800 in the S&P. But of course, you know, with these levels of volatility, uncertainty, both can happen within a matter of weeks, even days these days. So here are three strong convictions and their timeless rules. The first one: when you have moments of very high volatility like today, active investors can smartly take advantage of it. And the best way to do that is through structured products which sell volatility and thereby earn unusually high premiums from either selling calls or puts in a structured product. The second timeless rule for periods of stress and storms is diversification through quality bonds is the cheapest way to mitigate the volatility of stocks. Always remember that diversification is the only free lunch in markets. I'd even generalize, diversification is the only free lunch in life that I'm aware of. And my third point here is, you know, our view is and remains this rise of a new world order will ultimately drive markets higher, not lower. That's true globally, even though active asset allocation can make a really big difference here. And on that note, I'd be inclined to stay the course. I'd be inclined to add risk selectively if it did hit a low point of, say, 4,800.
Well, thank you, Burkhardt, for that clarity. Perhaps we can wrap up our conversation today by touching on two of your strong convictions for 2025. Now, for one, you've been bullish on gold, not only this year, but also back in 2024. Secondly, you argue that a global rotation could benefit European and Asian markets, that in comparison to U.S. markets. Where do we go from here?
Well, this time I'll suggest different answers to those two questions. The first one, let me start with a global rotation trade, which we discussed in January and February and March. Longer term, it still has legs to run. In the beginning of this year, the U.S.'s pain has clearly been Europe's gain. Cheap valuations, a rising euro, and tariff turmoil drove it. What's more, I said this before, we do think that the peak fear moment in the S&P 500 is, or on Wall Street, is probably behind us. So from here, U.S. markets should recover. U.S. companies are still more profitable. They're incredibly good at adapting to crises, overcoming them. And we think the AI theme, healthcare and utilities, are particularly attractive. And in Europe, we focus on the small and mid-cap, the famous Mittelstand and the Swiss dividend aristocrats. So, and on gold, you ask, well, we're not changing our view just yet. It's not in a bubble, and China's central bank remains a strategic buyer of it. So stay long for longer.
Burkhardt, thank you very much for your time and your insights today. It has been a concise and certainly helpful assessment of where we stand today and perhaps maybe heading from here. So as always, do look forward to reconnecting for our next conversation next week.
Thanks a lot, Ben. Always a great pleasure to catch up with you. Thank you very much and have a good rest of the day.
Thank you for tuning in. Be sure to visit ubs.com/studios to view the entire UBS Studios suite of podcast channels, along with our video offerings, such as UBS Trending. You can also follow us on Instagram for content highlights at UBS Trending. UBS Studios is part of the UBS Chief Investment Office within UBS Global Wealth Management. Visit ubs.com/CIO to view the latest research.
UBS Chief Investment Office's investment views are prepared and published by the Global Wealth Management business of UBS AG or its affiliate, UBS. This material has no regard to the specific investment objectives, financial situation, or particular needs of any specific recipient and is published for informational purposes only. As a firm providing wealth management services to clients globally, UBS AG and its subsidiaries offer both investment advisory services and brokerage services. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. In the USA, UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS AG and a member of FINRA SIPC. For information, please visit our website at ubs.com/workingwithus. For a full legal disclaimer applicable to the independent investment views produced by UBS, please visit our website at ubs.com/CIO-disclaimer.